Throughout their conjugal life there is a mysterious circuit of love and grace, whatever brings a husband and wife closer to one another. Mutual consent, devotion, and sacrifice can bring them closer to God, and whatever brings them closer to God brings them closer to one another. God alone is love, only He can teach us how to love. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved His church. What shines forth in the clear waters of perfect conjugal harmony is nothing less than the mystery of the espousals between God and humanity. Evidently it requires time and effort to reach this harmony. It is, in point of fact, the work of a lifetime, but to the degree it is attained, love's greatest joy is to be a reflection of God. Thus all life, human and divine, enters into the notion of love. We can measure the success of our lives and the strength of our personalities by our success in love. Upon that depends our personal equilibrium, our social influence, and our spiritual progress. Marriage and the universe. Thus far we have considered marriage only in its relation to men and women, but its scope is infinitely more vast. It goes beyond the two persons united in marriage, touches upon the very foundations of society and includes the universe itself. In one of his novels, Jules Romains uses the evocative phrase, "the world and its adventure." The adventure of love is nothing less than the world. Modern paleontologists and biologists like to give us a harmonious vision of the cosmos. The different kingdoms are not independent of one another. The material and the sentient and the rational and the spiritual, throughout all of these orders there is a progressive evolution. Although one order cannot accede of itself to a superior order, it nevertheless aspires towards it, and if it is aided by an external force can reach it. Universal history would then be nothing other than the obscure groping of all natural forces towards a paradise of the spirit and of charity, a gradual gestation towards the new heaven and the new earth of which Saint Paul and the Apocalypse speak. The notion of love fits well into this interpretation of things. For love is the strongest force at work in creation. It is the dynamic drive behind all change and becoming in the world, the great germ of life that is handed on from one marriage to another. When two people love each other, they project a great creative urge that is much larger than themselves. They participate in a divine gesture, a force that on the first day of creation set the planets spinning in space. When God told Adam and Eve to increase and multiply, He repeated to them what He had already said to the animal kingdom. This was not so much to liken them in any way to the animal world as to signify that by their union they entered into the enormous enterprise of creation. What science and the Bible suggest to us concerning the mystery of life, certain Oriental philosophers apply to the inanimate world as well. In the very physical structure of the world there are male and female elements which attract one another, meet and unite. Thus all the laws of association and rapprochement of bodies, from sidereal gravitation to the various chemical affinities, are but the unconscious workings of blind love. Without going into the intricacies of philosophy, we can affirm here that when two people love one another they then become aware of their solidarity with all of creation. In giving themselves to each other, they fall in step with the rhythm of the universe. But marriage is much more than a cosmic mechanism. It has something in common with nature but is far superior to it. What in nature is only attraction, affinity, instinct, soulless automatism, becomes in man the highest expression of liberty. This obscure force which always stirs the blood of creatures finds its fullest meaning in a love that is intelligent and free in its choice and consecration. An animal instinct thus becomes a spiritual force. The synthesis of the chemical world and biological attraction, all that is marvelous in nature, tends towards the communion of two souls. In the pact by which a man and woman pledge their love to one another, the movement of the universe is not only recognized but ennobled. This manner of seeing the work of love in the whole created universe shows forth its marvelous fertility. Its human radiation is an essential element of all social life. Through it society receives its warmth, its strength and its life. It is often said that the family is the basic cell of society. We might ask ourselves why this is true. Is it because the family replenishes society with new members? This viewpoint is correct, but it is only quantitative and does not touch upon the central issue at all. Is it because through the family are transmitted certain moral principles which are indispensable for the common good, such as justice, honor, fidelity and honesty? Here it might be objected that certain organizations, schools, political parties, youth movements could accomplish this work. In what then is the family unique and irreplaceable? It is unique and irreplaceable in this, that it hands down from parents to children, and contributes to society, the mysterious force of love. A love that is the total and perpetual gift of two human beings is at once the model and the instrument of all society. A society that limits itself to a similarity of interests soon suffocates. A society without love is little better than a prison. Because the family is the source of love, it is the generative cell of the human race. Other institutions can develop this love, but only the family can give it. That is why the church has based her whole social doctrine upon the family. Once we have taken as a fundamental social norm the evangelical command, "Love ye one another," we have no choice but to place the family at the heart of the great organism of society. Political and economic societies have their own set of laws and particular structure, but they are human, and we might ask ourselves if they could succeed in uniting mankind if they were not dominated by that respect for the liberties, that desire for personal development, that ideal of servitude and passion for understanding that only love can give. The strength of a man is his capacity for love. The strength of a society is the strength of love that unites its members. Love is not something that can be imposed from without, it comes from within and is passed on from person to person. The apprenticeship for social charity which the world needs today must be served in the family, for it is there, and only there, that man gives himself freely and totally. It is in this perspective that we can understand not only the social value of married couples but of the child as well. If a child were merely a numerical addition, mankind would not be greatly enriched. Numbers have no importance unless they are accompanied by values. And these values do not ultimately reside in physical force, intellectual culture, or professional competence. None of these things is of any social or human worth unless it is interiorly animated by one passion, the passion to serve. Otherwise we have a proud recluse, an Iets-Schien Superman, a dictator, in short, a difficult and perverted individual who destroys everything he touches and ends by destroying himself. A child can acquire an understanding of man, a respect for people, the ideal of service to others and a sense of the spiritual relations that unite men only through the family. Other institutions can give the rest, perhaps better. But only the family can give the sense of love. So in love and you will reap in love, the proverb has it. What society reaps from mankind is what the family has sown in the heart of the child. It is not difficult to find proof of this. Recent history has only too well demonstrated what happens to a society in which conjugal and familial love no longer have a place. Everything disintegrates. Even the meaning of the words man and woman is lost. Man becomes the male, a bruitish egotist, and never more so than when he is a hero. And woman becomes his plaything, unless under pretense of equality she tries to imitate him and thus develops into a repulsive caricature. One of the saddest tragedies of our times is the almost total masculine coloration of values. When the sense of love disappears, the meaning of paternity is also confused. Children become tools of the state and social authority rests with the strongest dictatorship. Again, if the meaning of love is lost, the equilibrium between the flesh and the spirit breaks down, sexuality becomes a mocking travesty of love. And when sex is no longer referred to love, souls withdraw into themselves and wither away. A society that refuses love becomes astonishingly and pitifully simple. It erases the difference of personalities under the weight of authority, stifles liberty under the coercion of a few harsh and abstract principles, and forces everything into rigid uniformity. The overriding law then becomes each man for himself. A society without love is a kingdom of solitude. When we lose this sense of love, we lose the sense of man. We also lose all sense of God. For the adventure of love leads to him. Both society and the church are engaged in this adventure. And just as love is a source of union for society, so too is it a source of charity for the Christian community, which is the church. That is the proper sacramental mystery of marriage. For each new growth in love should be accompanied by an increase of grace. It is the measure of generosity with which husband and wife respond to the inspiration of their love that they develop the spirit of the service and sacrifice for each other, that one becomes an instrument of sanctification for the other. It is by that measure too that they augment the capital of charity that is the very life of the church. That is why marriage is such a splendid image of the union of Christ and the church. The mission of Christ was to store up treasures for his bride, the mission of husbands and wives is to augment that treasure. It is in families, and according to the quality of love that reigns in families, that God will find his apostles, his doctors, his virgins, all of those who one day will answer the challenge of a pure and total and supernatural love. The greatest hope of the church today is the apostolate of the family. The desire young couples all over the world have to discuss, understand and meditate upon the mystery of their vocation. It is the first symptom of a spiritual renewal. The church needs priests and she needs them desperately, but the task of rebuilding a Christian world is still more urgent. And to do this we must first of all rebuild the Christian family. In this manner we will be preparing a generation of priests, indeed of saints, that is to say, men and women who believe in love according to the beautiful definition of Saint John. The treatise on the eminent dignity of love in the church has still to be written. But it is of small importance that it be set down between the covers of a book if it is already being lived in hearts. Such is the scope of marriage. It is a challenge to the whole man. It involves the individual and the community, the human person and the religious person, society and the church. We well realize that other factors besides love are necessary in molding men and society. What we are insisting on here is that without love they are all quite useless. Chapter A. The Splendor of Human Love. What is conjugal love? To answer this question, I think we must first of all distinguish conjugal love from all other loves, yet being mindful of Lacordaire's immortal line to the effect that there is only one love. But conjugal love, unique in its essence, admits of as many different kinds as there are objects to which it is directed and the different relations that exist between them. There are three fundamental characteristics of conjugal love that are immediately noticeable. First of all, it unites two people of different sexes. Second, it unites them irrevocably in view of a common good and the foundation of a family. Finally, it is a sacramental love sanctified by the grace of God. The love that attracts man towards woman and woman towards man is the most natural and the most ardent of all. It is founded on an appetite that has its roots in the very duality of our natures. With very few exceptions, it 34 is always an elective love. A man is not attracted by any type of woman and vice versa. For here we are in a domain in which the sexual appetite is inextricably bound to quite another type of choice that bears on the totality of the person as composite of body and soul. Because the soul is involved, we are offered something infinite and inexhaustible. For this reason, too, there is always a kind of essential dissatisfaction in love which we must not dissimulate. The two souls remain separate, as the bodies themselves whose union lasts only for a few moments. This gives rise to a ceaseless struggle in which the most satisfying of victories is immediately followed by a sort of relapse. It almost seems as if a trap were set for us into which we are continually falling. We cannot imagine what the union of man and woman in primitive innocence might have been, but it is certain that the curse of Genesis tainted the love of Adam and Eve.